Wolf Noy.
All right, Matt, welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 589.5. This is a special Sun episode. We're going to cover what I've been doing for the past few days, actually the past few months, but it's culminated in the past 3 days. Today, as we record this, is August 23rd. I kind of hit the jackpot, so to speak, on the 21st. Ironic that that resolves to 3/7. But it's me and Jason, and we're going to release this episode when I have the members video ready to go with it. So it will come out soon, but it's going to take me some time to get things ready. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And another hot and humid good morning.
So you've been tracking kind of, sort of, what I've been doing over the past few days. And here's the problem. As everyone knows, I've been looking for what we've been calling the sun we don't see, or the second sun, which, I want to be perfectly clear, I've located it. It was located by my friend on 6/6 this year, on D-Day in June 6th, and I couldn't find it. And the point I want to make here is I found it, but we don't know for sure what it is, all right? It's kind of like the lunar wave, unfortunately. All these years later, I still get emails asking, well, what was it? Did people finally discover what it is? Well, the quick answer is no. The longer answer is my opinion. And everyone knows what opinions are like, and I can't prove an opinion. It is my opinion that it is likely waves in the firmament, but that is neither here nor there. What we do know, talking about the lunar wave, is that it exists, that it was a filmed event, and that it was replicated. That brings us to the sun. I think it was late 2014, based on when I got my really rinky-dink hydrogen alpha scope back in the day, that I discovered the so-called second sun. I know certainly it was by 2015. The problem is we swapped hard drives and I lost my timestamps. But 2015, I put it out, video showing that this is not a light reflection. This is not a ghost in the Edelon. It's nothing. Well, by 2016, so minimally a year, if not 2 years later, something like that, Chris Van Maitre replicated what I did. Ironically, in 2016, the SLU Observatory was doing a live stream, which you can still look up on YouTube, for, I believe, children. And what they were doing was live streaming the transit of Mercury across the face of the sun. They had a problem. The so-called second sun was in frame. Half of it was in frame. About halfway through the clip, the guy, the astronomer from the SLU Observatory, finally says, I guess you're all wondering what that is. That's the second sun. Now, I'm going to tell you what he says, but not verbatim. You can go get the clip to get exactly what he says. Basically, what he says is, you didn't know, but there is a second sun. NASA knows all about it, but they don't want you to know about it. That's the gist of what he said. I went back through other SLU clips, and I found another live stream clip where I can see the glow and the edge of the second sun, or the sun we don't see, and they've positioned it, trying to keep it out of frame. But the problem they had was it was so close to the sun that they wanted live stream, they couldn't get it out of frame. In that second clip, they never refer to it, and no one asked about it. Do you want to add anything in here, Jason?
Well, from what you just said, I think a lot of people would ask the question, why wouldn't NASA want people to know about it if indeed they know about it?
Well, that's a simple answer. Gravity goes away. Heliocentrism goes away. A bunch of things go away. Is everyone familiar with the three-body problem? Well, with two suns, we start to approach the three-body problem, if that's even, in fact, what it is. And I want to be very careful here. I'm referring to it as the sun we don't see in the second sun because it's clearly related to the sun. It's clearly roughly the same size. It's clearly in the vicinity of our sun, but we don't know what it is. What I'm doing here is I'm going to lay down what I've achieved so other people can do what Chris Van Maitre did. But there's more to the story I was telling. Later, after the SLU had live streamed it and admitted there was a second sun, and that's another reason maybe to call it a sun, based on what SLU astronomers said, Chris Van Maitre and some others went to one of the Flat Earth conferences. Cami Nodel showed up, and she's a bit of an expert with filters. She took a polarizing light filter, and she proved that that second object is not a reflection. Now, the way you know this is the same way sunglasses work. when you're on water and the glint and the glare and the reflections are getting in your eyes, what do? You put on polarized sunglasses because reflected light can be eliminated by a polarized filter. That's what Cami Nodel brought to the table, and it was huge because it proved what I was already pretty sure was true, that it's not possible that it's a reflection or somehow a ghost in the Edelon or all these other things, because I had done all these processes to prove that wasn't the case. As a matter of fact, independent of me, I heard Chris Van Maitre had done similar things, putting the cardboard tube over the end of the scope and all these other things, light blocking techniques. Anyhow, that brings us up to now. 3 days ago, I was talking with Jason. That was the 20th of August. And I said, it's only a matter of time. This is going to happen. So we need to start prepping up. On the 21st, I was shooting with my friend who is a technical genius. He's helped me do all the security on everything. He helped me do the network and the tech for my telescopes and everything else that I have. He punches in while I'm live streaming on my computer, you know, so he can control things, or if I have to go out to the scope, he can do whatever's needed. And I looked and I said, hey, bud, what the hell is that on the left limb of the sun? So we're looking at the sun. I'm filming it as I always do, but out beyond the edge of the spicules, like if you go look at my solar work, there's all these little spiky things on the edge of the sun when it's well resolved, when it's a good image. Those are spicules. At the top of those spicules, that represents the edge of the sun that we're viewing in that wavelength. The only thing that goes further is the prominences. Beyond that, there was a ghost line. And we're sitting there trying to figure it out, trying to figure it out. And then all of a sudden, as I adjusted my gain and my exposure settings, I noticed it was wider, much wider on the other side. And that's when it hit me like a ton of bricks. I have been of a mind that the reason we can't see it all the time is a few reasons. One of the reasons is because I think it spends a lot of time behind our sun. And I believe now that is in fact what I have demonstrated. Again, I don't know what it is. SLU called it a second sun. I've been calling it a second sun, or the sun we don't see, because I don't have better words to label it. So I'm just going to continue to do that, making the point that I cannot prove, nor do I know for certain what we are looking at. I do know for certain that it's related to our sun. Okay, why can we see it sometimes in the visual spectrum? And by the way, Hydrogen Alpha, my telescope, that is in the visual spectrum. It's way, way to the right in the very edge of the red, but it is in the visual spectrum. What my scope does is it cuts out all the UV, IR, and it only lets through the hydrogen alpha band, which is why we can see, but it is in the visual spectrum. Why can some people see it at sunset and at sunrise? I believe when you look at something rising, like the moon or the sun, you're looking through a ton of pollution and atmosphere. You're looking through more atmosphere when an object is on the horizon than at any other time. And the further it gets from the horizon, the better the seeing is if you're trying to film it. So for the sun, most people don't even attempt to film it till it's 35 degrees or more off the horizon. But here's my point. I suspect you can see it at sunrise and sunset because so much atmosphere and the pollution is filtering it. I suspect the other times we have seen it, like when the fires were coming, the smoke was filtering it. And I suspect the filtering I'm talking about is that usually we can't see it because it's dimmer. Traditionally, it has looked a little smaller, though it appears that it's gotten bigger, which may mean that it's closer. I don't know. But that smoke or cloud cover or other things that have allowed people to see it in the daytime have knocked down the surface brightness of the sun and probably filtered out, I don't know, UV, IR, who knows. But that's why I suspect there are times that we can see it and times that we cannot. Again, Jason, do you want to get anything in here? Do you want to ask anything before I keep rolling along here?
Isn't it usually seen low to the horizon as opposed to being high in the sky?
I am aware, and I have been sent more images and video of it at sunset than any other time. Close second, a little higher than sunset, but heading for sunset. Close third at sunrise. And then the most rare was when we had the Canadian smoke in the air or other wildfire smoke or days that were just overcast in a weird way. By the way, it was just shot in the Middle East, clear as day. And I think you can still find that clip on YouTube. And maybe it's not just that clip, may be a little bit old, but it looks like maybe they've got residual sandstorm in the atmosphere. So maybe that was filtering it. So we're filming and we're live. And I'm trying to figure out what this is. When I see that it is fatter on one side, I immediately jump to, oh my word, I think I'm filming the so-called second sun behind our sun. My buddy says you're high. Here's the irony. My buddy is the guy who shot it on 6-6. On 6-6, when he shot it, he was trying to set up his telescope in white light. In white light, you see a round disk and sunspots. That's all you see. When he set up, he sent me a text going, what the heck? And the moment he sent it to me, I knew that's the so-called second sun. So I jump on the phone and I say, you got to record this. Well, the problem is he's trying to get his scope set and the gain set and everything set, but the clouds keep blocking it. So for people who use astronomy cameras, they know what happens. It becomes impossible. So finally, it breaks for a second and I yell at him, shoot your screen. So that screenshot is all I had on 6-6. Then the cloud cover blocked us. He saw it. He filmed it. I told him what it was. And like everyone else, he's skeptical. When I did what I did on the 21st, I showed Jason that night and he's skeptical. That's the problem we're facing here. I have all this experience and I've been hunting this thing. So I have a point of view, of course. But isn't it odd that for all these years I've been chasing this thing and what I'm about to show you, 95% certainly shows you there is something that, well, there's something there. But how do I roll it out to people so that it doesn't turn into a lunar wave thing where you faked it or you're high, you don't know what you're doing, you don't understand your equipment? So we get done with that day. And that night, I'm going crazy trying to figure out how I can demonstrate this. And then I realize I could animate it. It's got to move, right? So I'm getting ready to animate the next day. Here's the problem. When I shoot the full disk of the sun and I shoot 2,000 frames, those clips are 29 gigabytes. So what I decide to do instead is on the 22nd, I decide every hour on the hour, I will shoot one full frame shot, 2,000 frames, and then I will blow out the gain and make everything white. You've seen my images, so I can see the prominences and that glow around the edge really well. So that's what I do. Last night, which was the night of the 22nd, I get in my office and I lay them side by side and they had changed. They had moved. So now I know. I know something's there. I know the object I've been hunting is there. So I start to try to process it. And here's the irony. Every way that I try to process it destroys the view, because what we do is we tend to want to bring up the prominences and then we want the background to be black or dark because that's how the images look the best. And you just do that with contrast or with curves. And if you use the curves or contrast, it destroys any vestige of what I'm talking about. So I'm getting frustrated and thinking I don't have enough to roll this out to my members. And then I remembered. Way back in the day, I was grabbing NASA images and I grabbed the Earthrise over the moon image and I stuck it in Photoshop and I jacked up the levels and there was proof positive they had faked it. There was a square crop mark around the Earth, which, by the way, was the wrong size. I did this with a ton of their images. I believe there's still clips on YouTube where I did this with Pluto. I did this with any number of NASA things, proving that these are not images out of a camera of anything. They are constructed. They are fakery. NASA has since taken all those images down, fixed them, and put them up. And I mean, you can vouch for that, right, Jason?
Yeah, absolutely. Even Bart Sobrell was talking about that, how they color corrected shots on the moon to make sure it all looks consistent instead of the background one color and then the moon dust and dirt in the foreground being a different color. And then there's the ones with the Earth where it looks like it was just a square cutout placed there and then a new image taken.
Yeah, on the image I'm talking about, there was literally a square crop mark and the background around the Earth they'd created was a different color. So they pasted it in and they color corrected it all together. That's now been fixed. But to get to the point, I remembered doing that. So what I did, I'm going to describe to you. And when I make the video, I'm going to do a screen capture that shows you exactly how I do this for all the people that like to accuse me of faking or some other thing. I took a 2000 frame video and you put it in a stacking program. What the stacking program does is it takes each frame and it says, these are the best, these are the worst. So on the left, number one is the best, and it gets progressively worse down to the 2000th frame. The reason we do this is so we can choose the best 100 or 200 to stack them together, which makes everything more visible. At no time is anything fake or anything that's not in the film being added. You're just simply taking 200 images and stacking them into one. After I did that, I stuck it in Photoshop. I opened up levels and I took the center control, the mid portion of the levels, and I jacked it to the left, and voila, there it is. Now I'm going to show you all this. Is there anything else we should add here? Because this whole episode's going to be about the sun to try to offer different important pieces of information that are far from what NASA and our textbooks have told us. But you think that's enough there of that, Jason?
Well, what you showed me the first time and then the next 2 days, the deviation you had seen in the rings had moved. It was in a different position.
Yeah, it did move. But, you know, that's a whole story unto itself. I can't even believe that I detected it and that I had the peace of mind to recognize that it was important. It was typically a thing where I imagine most people would see it and they'd start messing with their focus and their gain to make it go away because it's not that noticeable. But I've been doing this long enough now that I'm really focused on the details. When you're playing this game with the sun, if you're not on the details, I mean, you're missing the whole game because not very often do obtrusive big events happen very quickly. I did manage to film a so-called CME, but that's rare. So we're going to move into the episode now with the sole purpose of the way that I look at the sun is far, far different than what I was told growing up, what school told me, and what NASA tells me. My point of view is that it is in lockstep with the changes that are happening in this world. In other words, the sun was going to be changing anyhow. The people with all the power in this world are leveraging on that fact. And not only that, they're chemtrailing, which is meant to block the spiritual upgrades that we should all be getting. At least that's part of what I suspect is going on. The sun is spiritual. The sun is alive. These are my points of view. So let's go into this from that point, Jason.
All right. So the first thing we're going to discuss is a breakdown of a video that someone released where they're asking Eric Dollard questions. He's in his car. It's kind of cobbled together depending upon which version you find, but the one I found, the longest version, he's sitting in his car through most of it and being interviewed about the sun. And the things he says are very different than what the mainstream says about the sun.
All right, let me interject here. So do you get the sense that that was the time when he was homeless, Jason?
Yeah, I think so.
So this is what happened. Eric Dollard was like Tesla, if there ever was such a man. He's a genius. He's an electrical savant. I mean, genius. The government has done everything to that man you can imagine, including stealing his name and opening a URL to defame him. They have raided his labs, they have destroyed his equipment, and they have made him homeless. If I'm not mistaken, and I might be getting parts of this wrong, I think a young electrical engineer took an interest in him. Is that what you remember, Jason? And got him to stop being homeless and got him back together. Do you think that's correct?
Something like that, because now multiple people are helping him and he's got a place set up and a lot of people, I think, are looking after him at this point.
So Eric Dollard is smarter than I will ever be in the next 5 lifetimes, probably. But before I ever heard of him, my ideas of what the sun were, like I would say it's a lens or things like this. I am damn near in lockstep with the things that you're going to hear Dollard describe, with some actual highly educated words that associate it with things that I don't know anything about, like electrical engineering. It is my point of view that the sun is electric and magnetic. It is my point of view that it has nothing to do. It is not a nuclear furnace, although those processes may be happening in the upper levels. So let's jump in from there, Jason, and cover what Dollard has offered us.
So all these points I'm going to be reading, this is from Eric Dollard's point of view. The sun is not what the mainstream says it is, but there are agencies that know that. However, no one truly understands how it actually works. Eric Dollard goes on to say that he spent 4 years studying the sun to make the conclusions that he came to.
And again, I don't even know how to describe it. He had collected, like he had these laboratories that were later destroyed, from what I understand. But some of the equipment in the laboratories was like antique, you know, back in the day, maybe the 50s, I'm grabbing a random date, where things were made robust and they were quality. Those were some of the things that he used, I imagine. I don't know for sure, but he did have labs. I mean, labs like no one else had. He put them together based on his genius, and that's why he was attacked. Anyhow, go ahead, Jason.
He references RCA Corporation, so that's probably where that equipment would have come from.
Yeah, they were unique labs with a unique mind behind it doing things, again, at a Tesla level, just because I don't have any other way to reference it.
The sun is hollow, and you can see that when you see the blackness of sunspots exposing the interior. There is only the outer surface. That is where what you see as light coming through the atmosphere comes from.
I'm all in. I am all in. Now, when I'm doing my work and I have to learn from the mainstream sources, they're going to tell me things like this. The sun is 93 million miles away. It's a ball. And by the way, I can see it rotate in hydrogen alpha. This just happened, and I'll show you in the video I'm going to make. And it's unusual. The sunspots that I was looking at on the 21st and the prominence rolled all the way around. And on the 22nd, they look pretty much the same place. And it's odd. Every time, you know, I haven't shot every day all the time, but the times that I have shot back to back, typically the next day, different sunspots, things look different. But to get back to the point, they claim that when I put filters on my camera, like hydrogen alpha or a G-band filter, that I'm either going higher up in the atmosphere of the sun to see what I'm seeing or lower down in. Now, they claim this is thousands of kilometers. That's what they claim. So the point I'm making here is there is a filter that I'm working on getting where you can supposedly see down into the sunspots. Even though my equipment's really good for an amateur, it's low end compared to what we can get, but you're supposed to be able to see things down in there. But I'll shut up now, but I'm with Dollard on his description that he just gave you.
There's no fusion going on. The only place that is occurring is on the flares that you see coming off of it. That's the only place where a fusion is taking place with hydrogen and helium. The sun itself is not a giant nuclear bomb in space. He also mentions that nuclear fission is a religion and you must believe or you go to jail.
And he's a man who not only talked the talk, he walked the walk. They did everything they could to destroy him and his equipment. And they literally put up a website, which was his name, to defame him.
You cannot see the sun in space. It acts as a converter or a transformer, and you won't see any light until it passes through something like the atmosphere. It would be invisible along with the rest of the stars if being viewed from space.
The first time I was exposed to Dollard saying this, it was like Christmas morning, getting an intelligent person to put down a paragraph that described what I thought was going on. Transformer. So let's cut to the chase here. If Dollard is right, and I accept that he is right currently based on what I know, what is that other thing? What goes with a transformer? So I'm just saying this is an exciting, exciting time if any of this pans out.
The sun is on a 22-year cycle. The video in which Eric Dollard is discussing the sun is at least 10 years old, probably more than that, in fact, and he makes mention that the ionosphere was weakening. It is now commonly reported that the ionosphere is weak right now, backing up what he was saying back then. He also mentions a much longer solar cycle that occurs over hundreds of years. He makes mention of interruptions with ham radio functionality, as well as the sun governing storm activity on the Earth.
I'm with him all the way. I have long had a mind that the so-called Carrington event is like the bubonic plague. It's a fear thing. Whatever happened, I do not accept that the sun is dangerous to us. Could something bad happen? Yes. But over the majority, 99.999% of time, the sun is not dangerous to us. It's quite the opposite. It allows life to be here. It is the light of this world. But Dollard says an interesting thing. He talks about cycles we don't hear too much about. The mainstream is going to tell you about 11-year cycle. Now, the thing with this 11-year cycle is all it's doing is marking when solar minimum, less activity is happening as compared with solar maximum. Right now, the sun is more active than I've ever seen it by a long shot. Now, I filmed during so-called solar max last time, or maybe it was the end of it. And what I see now is incredible, the level of activity. But my point is, this is the 11-year cycle is not the important cycle. I mean, for the pedestrian day-to-day, sure, it matters to know that the sun is more active. But these longer cycles are the big deal. And the way I try to describe it is, if we think of the sun and what it does in a year, it gives us those seasons. Now, there's a cycle like that over a much longer period of time. So the only thing I can compare it to is the idea of seasons based on what I've read. Now, I'm going to forget the name of the book. What is it? The Worship of Augustus Caesar? I think that's the book, Jason. One of the reasons I love that book is because all of the information about cycles and other things that are attached to the world teachers, like the Buddha, like Jesus. So anyhow, I'm starting to ramble, but let's go on from here. He mentions a 22-year cycle and a 100-year. The only one we ever really hear about is the 11-year. And by the way, solar max is supposed to be next year or maybe into 26.
And the last point from Dollard's video, he discusses how the sun is part of a system that works with another force coming from what he called counter space, or another dimension. This is where the energy that the sun is transforming comes from. This could also be some concept of the ether, but he doesn't exactly say that.
So my hair on my arm stands up every time he says it. Is that what the so-called second sun is? Is it a hole? Is it a port? Is it an object? It's clearly related to the sun. And here a man who's as smart as men get, particularly focused on electricity, which I accept the sun is electric. Is that what we're looking at here? Is that the other part of the transformer? Is that the source for the energy? And I'm just asking a lot of questions, but it's very exciting when someone at Dollard's level makes a statement like that. And here I am unrolling that there's another body, object, or maybe sun that I know for a fact exists.
And that's going to do it for the free section.
All right, there it is. Before I wrap up here, I want to say there's one rule on crow777radio.com, and that's be polite. That's it. And the only reason I'm mentioning this is because I don't want to do a repeat of what happened when I announced the lunar wave so many years ago. You don't have to agree with anything that's said or done, but however you do it, be polite. Anyhow, hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crrow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode, and they get free access to all the forums, comment sections. They can create their own forums and threads. They can stream the two-hour film that now has 10 awards called Shoot the Moon, covering all my prior scope work with the lunar waves and the initial discovery of the so-called second sun. They also, membership that is, get access, exclusive access to my current solar work, which is maybe becoming a big deal at this point. At least it is for me. Anyhow, I hope to see everybody logged in as a member for the second part of this. And that video we've been talking about that I will be editing together will be available right now if you're listening to this under the video link. So there it is, man. Grab a membership, log in, join us on the other side. I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. Cheers. We'll be right back.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.